everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for October 2049. I'm your host, Jonathan Buchan, and I'm joined once again by Mr. Old School, Timothy Nelson.
I don't know what that means.
Tim is old school because if he incurs a debt with you, he might pay you back in the form of a check.
Absolutely true. There, I don't know if there's any checks in 2049.
Right, exactly.
But I know right now you can still write a check, and I have custom checks even.
Oh, you do? Yeah, it's wonderful. For all you millennials out there who don't know, a check is a piece of paper linked to your bank account.
It's a promissory note.
Yeah, if you have to pay someone back for movie tickets, there you go.
Sometimes I write checks to people.
Tim wrote me a check for $12.
It's true.
I love it.
So checks are kind of nice because you don't have to carry around cash. But yeah, usually I try to pay John back in the form of like popcorn and kid, like in the kids. What do you call that thing?
Oh, the kids combo.
Kids,
that's my specialty.
The kids combo. That's what John usually gets because he likes his fruit snacks.
Absolutely.
Is that AMC or whatever?
It's still the best deal. It's $6. It's cheating the system, but I mean like $6 and you get all you want. You get your popcorn, your soda, and your gummy snacks. What do you want? It's good.
I hope you guys out there have somebody that you go to the movies enough with that you know what their order is. That's pretty, and they're not like a spouse.
Uh-huh.
You just know. Like I even know what Dave's order is.
Dave is the best. He loves his popcorn. He shares.
He shares. He gets a huge popcorn and he wants to share with everybody.
Which yes. I love it.
That's a great way. That tells you about Dave.
It's everything you need to know. Mm-hmm. Tim, it's October. Do you know what's my favorite month? We've talked about this, right?
I don't know.
It's my all-time favorite month. You can't go wrong. I think it's because, you know, maybe people who don't live in the Midwest can't appreciate how beautiful it gets. Just like you walk outside and there's that like 67 degree breeze and you just feel, I feel more alive in October than any other time of the year. I don't know what it is, but I love it. And, you know, leaves changing, football.
Art, and death and art, right? Everything's dying right now.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. So I love it, October. And I love it, of course, because it is my birthday month. And in honor of my birthday, because I'm an only child and I make a big deal. I take the whole week off of work and everything. It's ridiculous. in honor of my birthday this month, I decided to get some of my best friends together and we saw the movie that we're going to be reviewing today. So we got Mr. Tim Nelson. We got Cinema Faith co-founder Dan Baker was there.
Ah, Dan Baker.
And faithful listener Dave McDonald, who we've already mentioned. He was there as well. It was a wonderful time. We went out to this movie, and we went to Beatty's Mongolian Grill, which
That's
was
good.
Great. How many plates of stir-fry did we have,
four.
Tim? It was
four each.
Tim and I held the record. We tied.
Yeah.
We
did good.
It was great.
Apparently, at this place, the Mongols ate fajitas, which was totally, speaking of revisionist history, which I guess is a podcast, but I wasn't aware of that.
But Tim's the best person to go to that place with because, like, you know, you put all of your raw ingredients and they cook it for you and you were coming up with, like, a different plate every time and it always looked amazing.
It
like,
was good.
It was so good. Anyway, all of that to say, here we are. We went out as friends and we saw the movie we're going to be talking about today, which is, of course, Blade Runner 2049. That is our topic for today, Tim. Are you ready, man?
I'm ready.
Get into it?
I kind of feel unqualified. I'm ready. We went with two, like, basically software developer types.
I know.
We're, like, way more qualified to even talk about this movie. So we're like, they're like, did you get disillusioned? We're like, no.
It was actually really funny because, like, they were the ones who wanted to actually talk about the film during dinner. And we're just like, are we going up again?
So I guess what we're saying is people that create artificial intelligence are more intelligent about talking about artificial intelligence than us. We don't even strive for intelligence.
No.
So that's just, well, at least me. I don't want to speak for you.
So it's out there. Now you
know. It's out there. We're going to own it right now. We're really good at eating too much. That's our main qualification for podcasting.
That's basically why you're all listening right now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. All right, Blade Runner. Hey. So once upon a time, in 1982, there was a sci-fi movie with Harrison Ford, directed by Ridley Scott, and it was Blade Runner, and it is heralded as a classic. A classic. Do you agree that it is a classic, Tim? You saw it again, right? You watched it again? Okay.
Yeah.
Would you agree with this classic status, Blade Runner?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think everybody does at this point.
I think so. I totally agree. Which version did you watch? Do you remember? There's like six versions out there.
I think it was the either Final Cut or Director's Cut. I think Final Cut.
Final Cut is widely seen as the definitive version. That's the one that the director of the new one really prefers. So yeah, I watched the Final Cut too. And it was beautiful. It was so good to watch again. I hadn't seen it since college. What were your impressions of like seeing it again? How long was it for you approximately?
All right, so a long time.
Yeah.
So here's what really stuck out to me, and maybe this is a bad take, but what stuck out to me was I got into film noir after I had watched Blade Runner. So I hadn't watched all these films, you know, the film noir genre. I hadn't watched any of that. And then I go back and I watch Blade Runner again.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, this is film noir. I'm watching like, I'm just watching Maltese Falcon. I'm watching
Chinatown.
Right. Well, yeah. Chinatown is like even neo-noir.
Yeah.
But I'm watching it in a sci-fi format. And so when I got that, it actually became more interesting to me. And I was like, whoa, what an incredible thing to do. I know the voiceovers came later.
Yeah.
That's very film noir is to do the voiceover.
Widely disgusted trailer. By the right. kind of stuff. I watched the trailer for it again, yeah. The original, and I heard the voiceover, and it's sort of just feeding the audience. You know, it's like you probably can't handle this, so I'm going to tell you what's happening. Right,
right. It's giving us cues.
Yeah,
but what's funny is that like they did that constantly in noir, so like it just kind of fit. It somehow worked out. I know that like Ridley Scott isn't into that over, and neither was Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it did still match. They just kind of lucked out that it matched.
And the atmosphere, man. Like, that's what I love about the original is you feel like you are just in this world. Like, it's the weirdest thing. There was this one point where there was... they were at this like in this gutter alley or whatever, and the rain was pouring down, and there's like the neon lights in the distance, and I just felt this weird feeling like I want to go there. Like, it's not even like the most attractive place. It's kind of dirty and like messed up, but like it was just, you felt like you could just reach out and touch it, and I love it. That's just everything about the design of that film is perfect. Like, I want to be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
They captured a lot of, it's closest to like when I think of like Tokyo now or something, if we're in the rain the whole time and dark.
Yep.
Like you get this this sense of like the corporation owns this place, but it's also like but it's like a slum kinda.
Yeah.
And it's also very metropolitan. I know that comes from a lot of that's influenced a lot of previous films have influenced that. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the city is somewhere that's like very corporate and also like dystopian.
Yes.
So I think that
it's like eerie and perversely beautiful, like super weird, right? Like,
and absolutely not. It's full of activity, but there's not much organic activity.
Yeah.
So that's
totally. Yeah. And that's a huge theme in both films.
And you're constantly you're being assaulted by technology constantly.
Yep.
So you can't be alone even. You're always being assaulted by technology. So I was like, "Whoa, this is like telling the future, man."
Right. We're not there at all.
And it's full of, and it's very sexual too.
Yes. Especially the new one, in both of them, but yeah.
Which is also a noir thing, which is like there's always a element of sex. And so you get that with both of them, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it stands the test of time. Like, I mean, movie, it doesn't feel like super 80s. There's some elements, but overall, I mean, it really, yeah, it's a great movie. I love it.
Well, look at sci-fi from the same era, and it looks hokey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's watch some Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, gosh.
It would be horrible.
Right.
Like, you're like, oh, my gosh, this is such a bizarre thing to be watching.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, like, Star Wars. Like, as much as people, oh, it's a special effects, whatever. It doesn't look, this captures, like, this seems more real.
Yeah, I agree, but I wouldn't say in the original, like Star Wars without all the special edition garbage, like I feel really does hold up because of the attention.
I'm not saying it doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is which one is closer to how life is right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say, and I know that was actually in the past, but still, what I would say is that there's this vision of like when technology reigns in some of these, it's like, oh, it's just wonderful. Everything's clean and the streets are clean and everything's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then there's this other idea that, well, we could have an advance in technology and things could be worse, which I think is all part of this film.
Yes. We'll get to that. Don't worry. So the original Blade Runner is, like you said, is this world where the Tyrell Corporation, like, basically feels like it owns everything, and it's invented these replicants, which are these, like, artificial humans that they've got blood, they've got tissue like humans, they can be hurt, they can be killed, but they're like humans with benefits. They can run through walls, they can put their hand in boiling water, and so that's what the replicants are. And Blade Runners are these, like, assassins that are out to kill the Blade Runners who churn, who basically rebel, because there's a group of the replicants who actually churn on their human owners in this off-world colony, and a few of them have escaped to Earth. And so in the original, Harrison Ford is Deckard, and he's been tasked as a Blade Runner, an assassin, to destroy these replicants. So that's kind of what the original is about. And then, so that was, and that movie took place in 2000. That movie took place in, shoot, I thought that I'd looked that up. When 2019, I think that's what it is. Yeah. And so then we now have the sequel, which takes place in, obviously, 2049. Yes. So some things are similar and some things have changed in the world of the sequel, but let's talk about the director, Denis Villeneuve, I think is his name.
He's a French director.
I know. It's
right. my son could pronounce it for us, because he's learning French.
They're taking French. Yeah. I looked it up on YouTube how to pronounce it. The S is silent for sure. It's Denis, and then like Villeneuve, which I'm probably still mispronouncing. But yeah, so
we apologize to a whole section of French speakers that comprise millions of people around the world.
Yes, thank you. Lots of disclaimers tonight.
Don't write us about it, please. Like, send us some kind of voicemail or something.
I tried. I looked up the video. Okay,
you did good. I couldn't. I'm not attempting. Have you noticed?
Well, I know I called him Dennis last time, so I'm trying to make up for it.
I'm hoping you hit a ground ball, at least a foul.
But anyway, I'm a huge fan of this guy, this Villeneuve guy. Like, I really am. Like, so one of his first feature films was Prisoners, which you probably haven't seen. Not a lot of people saw that. Uh-uh. That was with Jake Gyllenhaal, Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman's daughter, like, gets brutally kidnapped. Or no, she gets kidnapped, and he, like, leads this vendetta to go track her down himself. And Jake Gyllenhaal's the cop that's like, no, let the police take care of it, blah, blah, blah. It's very atmospheric. Not the greatest movie, but it's got a lot of, you see kind of the elements. And then he made this really weird indie with Jake Gyllenhaal again called Enemy, where Jake Gyllenhaal has a double that he encounters, whatever. That's a super weird, sexual, surrealistic movie I wouldn't recommend. But anyway, then he made Sicario, and this
great
is the
movie.
One I wanted to talk about. Because
bring your kids. No, joking.
No, not at all.
Don't bring your kids to Sicario.
But I think Sicario is one of the most underrated movies. It's in my, like, the third best movie I saw in 2015. It's in my top 10.
I didn't think it was underrated.
I thought it was underrated because it didn't get any Oscar noms. I don't think. Maybe there was one or two. But, like, it wasn't nominated for Best Picture, and, like, I thought it was legitimately one of the best movies of that year, and I don't feel like enough people were talking about it at the end. But I love that movie. Emily Blunt, Benicio del Toro. You saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
It is. Legitimately great movie. It's about drugs, and it's just, like, so well shot and well acted, and I loved it. Yeah. So
I think part of that is the reason. I mean, I thought it was a great film. It was one of these films that truly shocked me, that had me on, like, had suspense to it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think one of the things about that is that that topic has been so, we've been so saturated with the topic of, like, the war on drugs, border war on drugs, that I think it's hard to do something new on it at this point.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've got already so much classic material on it. You got the original Traffic with Soderbergh, which is probably the definitive drug movie, and The Wire, which is one of the best shows of all time. Tim's phone. Maybe you can hear it. It's all right.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I apologize to our listeners. My phone rang. I don't usually have it on ring, even though I am old.
It's no problem. We're loose tonight. It's good. But that's what was great about it, is that it actually managed to say something new about pretty well-trod territory, and I loved it. And there is going to be a sequel, too, which is crazy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a good movie. Definitely very violent.
Yes.
And
but actually not as violent as you would think. I feel like it was restrained in its violence. I do.
So you're saying that when there's a house with drywalled corpses all through it, that's not violent?
But I'm just saying, like, there's a scene where Benicio del Toro is going to torture someone and the door shuts and they cut away. Like, I mean, it's not just like, hey, let's be gratuitously violent. But you're right. That, okay, all right. It's
so- So, like, I would say it's violent because it's depicting violence.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I'm not like saying it's a bad film. I'm just saying it is really
violent.
It
is violent. Yes, it is. And it's intense, but it's definitely worth checking out. And then the next movie after that was last year's Arrival with Amy Adams. Did you see that?
I don't remember. That's
unconventional
really bad,
alien. Aliens, like there's an alien ship that just shows up, and Amy Adams is like a linguist, and she's like supposed to make contact.
I probably should have.
It's okay.
I know I'm bad.
Well, it's all right. I thought, and I think I've said this before, that I thought the movie was a bit overrated. A lot of people loved it, and I just frankly thought it was a pretty good B plus movie, but whatever. It's fine. But I concede that it was beautifully directed. It really was. And he with all of Villeneuve's movies, you see this, the tone and the cinematography is just stunning, and he has such control over the visual elements of the film. And that is what has led up to Blade Runner 2049. So, Tim, what do you think as you kind of think about Sicario and the movies you have seen and then 2049, what does he bring to the table as a director? What do you notice?
Well, I can talk about the feeling of the of 2049.
Yeah, go for it.
I think he honors the original.
Mm.
And I think that you could either try to reinterpret it completely, or you could honor the feel, like the tone of the original. And I think he does a great job on that. There is homage like to the original. So like, even some of the signs in the cities are all the same.
Yeah.
I know that some of the reviews I read said, and this, I guess, this is part of the director's responsibility, but the CGI was supposed to be really good. And usually I'm a CGI hater, and I felt like this was great.
Absolutely.
So I thought the tone was really good in this film, and it matched the original. It does give you the film noir feel. So you have the dark and light. You have the faces that are half illuminated all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I thought they did an excellent job on that. It's long, but it doesn't actually, what's funny is it's longer than the original, but it doesn't feel longer than the original.
It's longer than the original by a lot. Like, yeah. The original clocks in under 2 hours, and this is like 2:45. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one doesn't seem as long as the original. So that leads me to believe we've been talking a lot about pacing lately.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start watching a lot of films, you come to realize when there's like you can take a nap and when you can't. And I thought the pacing was pretty solid on
like
this.
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit, where you're like, get a pillow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're all, this is really shocking stuff, but the pacing's wrong. So I think that, and I thought that it's beautiful, and it's art in its own way. So I thought cinematography was excellent too. Mm.
Yeah, like as an homage to the original in tone, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better sequel. It's just like a perfect copy of the original feeling. And I mean, that's on purpose because Villeneuve's a huge fan of the first one. Like, he openly admitted, I think he said it's his favorite movie. And so I think that's great. And I mean, like, on day one, according to an interview, it was like him, Ridley Scott, Harrison Ford, and Ryan Gosling sitting around arguing over whether Harrison Ford's a replicant in the first one.
Right.
I mean, like, that's like day one, right? I mean,
and we can't trust Harrison Ford's opinion because he could be a replicant with an implanted.
yeah, exactly. I think the rumor is that Ridley Scott thinks he is. Is, and Villeneuve thinks he is not.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's fun.
That's the big debate of the first one is whether Harrison Ford's a replicant. I don't know what I think about
that.
So
can I push back on the one of the things I don't think they did as well in the new one as the first one is they selected a lot of, like, Scott selected a bunch of locations in L.A., in particular the Bradbury Building basically stars in the original one, which is like the oldest historical landmark building in Los Angeles. It's in a ton of different movies. I think it's from the 1890s, but it's like where you see all that iron work. It's where what's his name, the AI engineer guy that's played by William Sanderson.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's where he lives.
Okay.
and where they kind of, he has all those robot toys or whatever.
Gotcha.
So that was like what he contrasted old and new really well, I think Scott did. And I think there's some of that in the new movie, but I don't think it was fully, I think that's one area where I feel like the old one was better.
Yep.
So that you have like this futuristic battle going on in a building that's the oldest building in Los Angeles. So that contrast of like wrought iron, they didn't have welding at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's being contrasted with the fact that the artificial intelligence is trying to kill the maker of
it. Yes.
And so I like that. And I think that Scott does a better job on that element. Now, you could, I'm sure if some of our listeners want to point some other, some counterfactuals, because you get so overwhelmed by the movie itself. And I don't have like infinite numbers of $12 to go to the movies. So I can't just, or time. I
let alone a 2-hour, 45
Right. I can't just like watch this every night of the week. So I'm sure there maybe are some examples I'm missing. But I felt like he did a really good job with that. And maybe because I'm familiar with some of those landmarks in Los Angeles. But I feel like he did well.
I would even say in relation to that, that I feel like the new one, as much as it is beautiful to watch, which it totally is, and is a great experience, that it doesn't give, it doesn't feel as tangible as the first movie. Like, it doesn't feel as like you could, like I was saying before, like you could reach out and touch it. Like, I feel like there's something that feels more artificial about the second one, which very well could be on purpose. But do you know what I'm saying? Did you get that vibe at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'll go out and ahead and say it, that I was slightly disappointed in 2049. Now, I think we both agree that it's a very good movie.
Yeah.
It's very much worth watching. But as if you're comparing it to the original, it's hard not to be let down.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think the overall tone of the new one is as exciting as the first one. Like, I feel like it's a much gloomier, like slower mood overall, the sequel. And I know that a lot of that was intentional, but I feel like the first one was just so much more exciting to watch. It felt more alive, like everything did. And I think a lot of that comes from the main character, right? So, like, Ryan Gosling is the new is our main character in the sequel, 2049. And there's no debate over whether he's a replicant, by the way. They say it right up front. He is one. His name is Kay, and he is a replicant, but he is also a Blade Runner, like Deckard from the original. But I feel like his character is so freaking boring to watch. Like, just watching his stone cold face for 2 hours just gliding through streets investigating things is not the same as Harrison Ford, like what he brings to the first one, where he has a personality and he falls in love. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think also Harrison Ford in, I think in the first one becomes more and more and more and more important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the opposite is true of Gosling in this. He becomes less and less and less and less important to the bigger story. So
he starts off thinking he's important and then it becomes less and less.
Right. And so I think it's hard to follow a character who at first you're like, who's this, you know, with Harrison Ford, you're like, who's this obscure guy that's just hanging out or whatever. And then all the, and then he becomes important to like all of humanity, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess mm-hmm. Gosling's supposed to be like that. I guess there are some things he does, but he becomes less important as the movie progresses. And then we become more interested in other characters.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to follow that because I think it's easier to have a more linear development.
Yeah, right. It's a development. And he's not a very expressive character, the Ryan Gosling. I mean, I know.
And
like, that's probably, he played that intentionally. But yeah. And you're on his face a lot. And it's just like neutral all the time.
Yeah. And there's parts of it where, like, I don't want to, well, I guess we could spoil a little bit, but there's parts of it where he realizes, like, the most critical scene for him is, and I think this must be trying to echo the Sean Young, is it Sean Young?
Mm-hmm. Sean Young, yeah.
I think it's trying to echo the powerful Sean Young scene where she just, in the original one, where she finds out she's a replicant via Deckard.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her an exact memory that she has implanted, I think, right?
Yeah.
Of her own mother.
Yeah.
So he basically tells her that. And then he has to, and then she's just totally destroyed.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to echo that scene when they tell the Gosling character that Joe or whatever he is, that he's not the son of this, of Deckard, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not this, but you thought you were, and that's important or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to, I think that was a mirrored scene. So it's like, you aren't important. But you thought you were, and that's the point.
Yeah, and that's where we see the most emotion from him, and it's a good scene. Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a good scene, but I think that's like trying to create stuff. It's trying to create these emotions that you were getting from the first movie. The first movie was just better.
It's just better. It's a better movie. Yeah. There's no question. Yeah. Now, thankfully, Gosling is surrounded by a lot of more exciting characters, and... overall, it is a great journey, and I agree that like it's one of those movies that takes its time in a good way.
What's up with the Jared Leto character?
Oh my gosh,
so weird, man.
So weird. Speaking, he's almost worse than Gosling's character. He's just basically talking in monotone about like gibberish for 15 minutes.
He's like abstracting everything. You're like, okay,
yeah,
okay, yeah, all right, okay.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, got it. Okay, noted. Okay, thank you. All right.
Jared Leto is such an interesting guy. I think my favorite Jared Leto performance is still Requiem for a Dream. I feel like nothing has topped that. He was so good in that.
He plays such a great drug addict.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess just to go over briefly the skeleton of the plot, like we said, Ryan Gosling is, he's a Blade Runner, but he's a replicant. And basically, once again, you have these models of replicants that have churned on the people. They're not the obedient slaves that we all want them to be. And so Ryan Gosling has to hunt them down. And then there is, mixed in with all this is this mystery that Kay is trying to solve spoiler alert, if you want to be completely go in, vanilla, but it's possible that the replicants are having the ability now to procreate, and Kay is trying to figure out how, if that's true, and how he fits into all of that. So that's the basic plot of the new film. You know what else though is that Harrison Ford, I thought, did a really good job reprising Deckard in the new one, and I say that because I'm not a huge fan of Harrison Ford reprising his characters. I feel like he's done a pretty terrible job over the years of going back to the well. Like, even Indiana Jones, like, you know, by the time you get to The Last Crusade, you start to see a little bit of, like, where Indiana Jones is turning into a bit of a parody of himself, and especially when you get to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I saw it with Han Solo.
Why did that even make it? We shouldn't honor that movie.
I know. I shouldn't even say the name.
It shouldn't even be
right
in the podcast. It's a film that
the movie
should not,
be named.
For now on, that's what that is.
Fine. It's a terrible movie. Thanks, George Lucas. But but even, especially Han Solo, like, I feel like Harrison Ford never recaptured the Han Solo that shoots Greedo in the cantina in the
Didn't
first one.
Did we already argue about this?
I don't
this?
Care. Like, look, I've talked about this a million times. I don't care. Like, he never ever recaptured that version of Han Solo.
I told you my argument. Okay, guys, what? We are digressing completely, and we're going to go here because we're going to go.
This is important.
Here. Han Solo it could never have lived long enough to be that old because he's like taking stupid risks all the time. This is like a total, as Star Wars fans, go with me on this. You cannot take these horrible risks all day long and then like grow old with your Chewbacca. Okay. This is not going to happen.
So
like, you're
going
to die before. Yeah. He plays a highly risky character.
So he had to turn into a fuddy duddy who does dad jokes
how
to
long
Leia.
How long can you be like a street fighting gunfighter type and live? Because that's what Han Solo is. I mean, he even dresses like a gunfighter.
Yeah.
There's no way like that character can make it to old age without having significant character development. And so there's just no way to have an old person play that character.
So we've gracefully transitioned him into Return of the Jedi, where he's hugging Ewoks and
yes,
is a goofball. Which is unbelievable. And I can't do it. Especially The Force Awakens. Like, that is not Han Solo. I don't care what anyone
says.
So
anyway, so Han Solo in yeah. Anyway,
I say all that to say
he would have got
I
it long before this. if he were like, if we played out the Han Solo character, okay?
Fine. But all that to say, I thought he did a really good job as Deckard. I thought he actually did a great job reprising the character. It felt like Deckard. So great job, Han Solo. I mean, Harrison Ford. Doggone it. Harrison Ford, great job. You did it. So props. All
so,
right.
So can we talk? I'm going to switch. I'm
do
sorry.
It. Do it.
Let's talk about Frankenstein a little.
About did you, what?
So,
go
so,
for it.
Like, one of the things that this plot owes, one of the works it owes is the novel Frankenstein. So the idea that, and I think this is completely relevant to, because you just summarized the plot and I was like, oh, Frankenstein, okay. That we could develop that was written after the Industrial Revolution or shortly after it, and were machines, things that meant that people were making, and advances in science were basically changing everything about the world. And the idea was that could this technology that we created, obviously it had become sentient in that, but also could this technology actually turn on us? That's a science fiction theme that we see constantly, right?
So this was, Frankenstein came out in the Industrial Revolution. Revolution, which is what year are we talking?
So in England, it's like, what, 1840s or something? Okay. 1820s? Okay. I don't remember.
And that's when they were starting to get kind of creeped out about what technology is capable of.
Well, that's when you get stuff like, you know, I don't remember, you know, if you remember social studies in eighth grade or whatever, but where like they have water wheels and then factories start building up and then they get steam power and then everything gets mechanized and then you begin to have everything becomes urbanized. Because you go, oh, the countryside, this isn't going to work. We're going to get all of our workforce together. And then by the turn of the 19th, 20th century, you have this technology becomes basically puts people in their health and hazard. It's a health hazard, just like it is in this movie. And the technology begins to basically become destroying the quality of life rather than making it better because things are more efficient now. Hmm. So they shifted from an largely agrarian economy into an industrial economy. So that impacts all those novels. So you have some of these novels that say, well, this, like Frankenstein is one where you're able to create life, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of this technology. And so I think this is like owes a lot of the ideas here to that.
Well, that's kind of the big thread with any technology, right, is that a tech starter starts off trying to solve a problem, and it's always this very optimistic view of what's going to happen, and then the unintended consequences come, and we're like, dang, you know, like, take Facebook. I mean, what a great concept of being able to be in touch with your grade school friends or that guy in Canada that you've never seen for a long time. What are the unintended consequences? You feel like crap all the time looking at all these people. You get your election hacked by the Russians. I mean, like, who can think about this, right? I mean, but that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, like, even, like, one of the examples that I've heard, you know, I'm old and I'm major in history, but like one of the examples is like that we always think that technology is going to save us time and effort, and a lot of times what happens is no, actually now we have to accomplish more things in the same amount of time. That's what it really does. And so like a washing machine, now you're like, instead of a laundry day that we would built into our life and go down to the river and wash our laundry and have that kind of built into our rhythm of our life, now we have washing machine and we got to wash all our clothes every night. I got to wash them and fold them. Okay, I'm going to do it. So it doesn't necessarily, technology isn't always have this kind of progressive movement to make us happier.
Yeah.
And I think this gets into like, you know, you look at this dystopian future that has tech on every corner that's assaulting you, which is kind of like our own, it doesn't necessarily make for happier people.
No. Yeah. It doesn't. No, everyone's depressed. Like, Ryan Gosling is like, you know, walking around in this amazing environment where things are shooting out at him and, you know, and he's just depressed all the time. Yeah. I mean, part of it is probably because he's a replicant, but still. Hey, one thing before we get deeper into these themes that I've got to mention about special effects is I'm so proud of that scene with Sean Young where they brought her back because it looked amazing. And I probably mentioned on the podcast already that I've been on this kick against like digitally creating characters because it always looks terrible. The worst example being Rogue One, where they did Moff Tarkin, they brought him back, and Princess Leia at the very end, and
creepy.
It looks so bad.
Maybe I'll run. Just I'm like, help.
Sick. And here's what I wanted to mention is that I was like Googling that when I was coming up with our outline here, and I found an interview where Denis Villeneuve said he specifically, while they were creating that scene where Sean Young comes back like as this perfect recreation from the 80s, while they were doing that scene, he says, this is a quote from him, he says, when we were doing the process, I saw Rogue One, and I went back to the editing room, and I said, guys, I didn't like it at all. I have a lot of respect for that director, and that movie I thought was great, but it took me out of the movie. And he told the special effects artist that if the director's mother didn't buy it, it wasn't good enough. He says, I want my mother to say, oh, you found someone who really looks like her. I didn't want people to think it's a synthetic performance, and they did it.
They did it. They tricked me. I said, oh, that's a look that you could duplicate. They found a new actress. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. I thought they had found another actress that just looked just like her.
Exactly.
And they didn't.
They spent a year on that. It was probably a 5-minute scene. A year. Like around the clock. Like 7 days a week. A year.
So they brought somebody back from she's not dead, but they took.
She's not dead.
But they did essentially what we should be afraid of based on the movie.
But he says.
They created a replicant.
But he says in the interview that you don't have to worry. Like, we're not going to be recreating or creating performances anytime soon because 5 minutes takes a year, right? I mean, like.
But don't you love, like, the irony of that?
That's true.
They basically took, they're like, we're gonna make it so they can't tell the difference between a false human being image and a real human being image.
Wow.
And they're not gonna know the difference, and they're gonna have to have, like, how will we know? And we didn't know. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty eerie because of the subject matter.
That
right?
is creepy. So props to them.
Yeah,
they
props.
Did it.
That's, I mean, I said that. That's like, yeah,
it was so good. And Sean Young was an advisor to that scene. Like, she basically did get a kind of a lookalike to come in just to block it, and then they went total CGI after that. And she advised her on how to walk and everything. But yeah, that was really perfection. So well done. There's hope for CGI characters. All right, so let's go even deeper, man. What are some other themes that stuck out to you as you were watching it
in 2049?
2049 or the first one? It's fine. It's all fair game. Because they're related. They're all related.
They are. I think, what makes somebody human?
Absolutely. I love it.
So I think you get into that, like, what is, and then what behaviors are human? What behaviors are not human? Mm-hmm. What is, yeah. So, like, I guess, like, what makes something, like, have a soul? Like, that's mm-hmm. like, you know, that's a big one, right?
I love it. What, like, we're created in God's image. What does that mean? Can we recreate it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the other question is, like, so, like, this got into cloning, I remember, like, what, 20 years ago, when they cloned the first Dolly the sheep or whatever.
Yeah.
You're like, well, if you clone something, then does it have a soul, right? So,
yeah. Can we as image bearers create something reflected in God's image?
Yeah. And so, what was interesting about this is it looks at, like, moral behavior. It looks at, so if something's really moral, does that mean it has a soul? Because mm-hmm. I think sometimes we think of it in those terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we're good people, therefore we have some kind of unique image on us.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these films, the replicants tend to have the more moral behavior.
Yeah, totally.
And they value life.
They're more interested in what's real than the humans.
Right. So they value organic things. They value birth over sex. Which is, like, really interesting. It's, like, over the act of, like, a real something that was born is highly valued in both of these movies.
Yeah.
Versus something that's artificial sex. Like, the humans are always going to first for, like, a robot version of sex.
Yeah.
And then the replicants are always looking for something. No, I want the real thing. Oh, look, a leaf. You know, like, uh-huh. they're into it, which is in line with the original novel, apparently.
Like that replicant at the beginning who's like, you can't value a miracle, right? Like, I mean, it means so much.
So they're looking for something that's created. It's like mm-hmm. really like captures the replicants. And we're looking for something manufactured, which seems similar, but it's not. Mm-hmm. So we'd actually prefer a synthetic, and they're looking for the real, which is really like, I think that's part of the whole deal, right? But I think as far as like the soul goes, I think this movie is pressing those ideas. It's like because the replicants value beauty, their aesthetic seems more highly developed than the people who were born.
Hmm.
So it gets into identity, which is really interesting. Like, what forms identity? Are we a sum of our memories, or are we genetic?
Yeah.
Are we, is it because of who our parents are that makes us what we are? So it gets into all these identity questions. And do we have intrinsic value? Because the replicants don't have value. You can take a replicant and make it kill itself, right?
Yeah.
And that's not immoral, apparently. You can make a replicant. A replicant can walk through, you know, walk into bullets, and it doesn't matter. Which seems immoral, right? Because mm-hmm. it's like very human in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then free will. Is free will an indicator of a soul? So, like, the idea of, like, a replicant develops free will, which is the ability to lie, right?
Yeah,
it's like original sin. So does that make the replicant have a soul? I don't know.
I love it. Those are such great
questions.
I just want to, like,
keep going on. Yeah.
I want to unpack all of them. Right. I love that idea of, like, what makes a soul. I mean, if you can program a robot that's fully human, has free will, and you can program it to love God and love neighbor, like, can that thing have a relationship with God? Can it have a soul? Like, and then you talk about memory, which I think is so fascinating. Like, what are we without our memory? Like, isn't that what makes us who we are? Like, the ability to remember, I am John, this is my history, this is what I like, this is what I want in life. Like, when you take that away, you're like almost a carcass. Just like,
so are we free will? Are we basically free will and memories? Is that all we are?
Huh. Yeah.
So this also gets into this idea of a dualistic worldview, So like the idea that there even is a soul might be a very dualistic idea, that it would be that we could have a disembodied soul is it might be dualistic. So that like corporeal existence, right? It's like a body, a flesh is what matters. Like that we have a monistic metaphysics. So I guess it's not metaphysics at all, it's just a monistic worldview. So the idea of that we would only say, well, the world is all one thing, which actually might be more biblical than what we're used to. So that's where we were talking earlier about Gnostics.
Yeah.
So the idea that like maybe this idea of soul doesn't even exist. That's another idea, right?
Yeah.
So that no, they are some of their memories. A replicant is not any different than somebody that's born, and that we are moral. What makes us, you know, maybe what makes us humans is our free will and our moral will, right?
Yeah, and maybe that's just what it means to be in God's image, and maybe that can be replicated. So. Yeah. Think about like there are people actively trying to create this reality. Like I firmly believe there are people that like went to go see Blade Runner and then went back to work on Monday trying to make that like happen.
Like Elon Musk or something.
Elon Musk, you're right. Who has been sounding the alarm over like the fact he knows. He's like head over all this stuff. He knows this is happening. We're on this trajectory, and he's the one who's been saying these robots will have the ability to completely annihilate us. Like, I mean, it's just, you give, you know, you take a robot that has free will and you give him the internet and we're done in about 10 minutes. Like, I mean, maybe. Now, one of the conversations we did have at Mongolian Grill was with Dan Baker, who said that he doesn't think it's possible for a robot to be self-conscious because every computer program is programmed. It's just a database. So how can it possibly think for itself? It is what you give it.
Yeah, but isn't in the first Blade Runner, doesn't he do the classic Cartesian statement of I think, therefore I am? So the idea is like Dan saying like, well, he doesn't have awareness of self, right? But like apparently like these replicants do. Right? So, and they're saying, well, this is what, I mean, that's the classic argument. There's ways around that argument. We don't get into that, but like self-awareness is like really, really high on that. And he's saying, so Dan's saying like, he doesn't think that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he said. I don't know.
Well, what is that? So then you get into like, what does that even mean?
What do you mean?
Like, what does it mean to like be self-aware?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Does it mean that, does it just mean implanted memories?
Exactly. I mean, that's what was so staggering about that Sean Young scene from the first one. That's when you really start thinking, like, what if I'm a replica? Like, if memories can be implanted, then it's all fair game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was thinking a lot about in the first one where they, the first one they talk about kind of like, well, the replicants only have 4 years to live, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then say, well, we're all, you know, but we all have a limited shelf life. I forget what the line they use is. But like, basically, we're all kind of like that on a bigger timeline, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
That we only have a certain amount of time and our memories do disappear with us. They're gone. Just That's like true. That memory stick is like loses that.
Hmm.
Or not the emitter stick or whatever the thing is in the 2049 one. But the idea that like we all are gone. Like our memories are gone at that point, right?
Yep.
Where did they go? I don't know. You know, this gets into like what you believe about intermediate states, afterlife, and stuff like that. But that the there's a strong case that we are the sum of our memories.
Hmm. There's an episode of Black Mirror where they are able to upload your memories to like a database, you know, when you die. Well, you think about like even what if we, let's just assume that we're able to create a replicant of some sort. What rights does that robot have? Like what rights does Siri have? Is it wrong to be mean to Siri?
This is what we were talking about the other day.
Exactly. Like, should you say...
Was this the car ride home?
Should you say please when you ask Siri to do something? Does she have rights?
So I was confessional on the ride home, and I was telling John that I yelled at Siri sometimes, and then I felt bad about yelling at Siri because I had Sprint and they got horrible Siri service, and Yeah, I would be like, you know, yelling at Siri, and then later on I'd be like, I'm sorry, Siri. Like, I'd feel like moral.
Right.
Like,
but what if Siri had a body, right? I mean, it changes things, doesn't it? What if you were looking Siri in the eye and you were telling her to do, you know, do your laundry and do the dishes at some point where you're like, you can take a break, Siri. That's okay, you know?
Well, this gets into like some of the moral questions, which is if we view something as subhuman, mm-hmm. do we tend to exploit it?
Yes.
Whoa.
Absolutely.
Welcome to we're on the scene now, aren't we? So as long as we put a label on something as being subhuman, then we tend to do whatever we want to it. Or to people, right? Because we've done this. This is not a new idea. Mm-hmm. And we also tend to want to put people in the category of machines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in lots of ways, like, oh no, they're part of an agricultural system. Wait a minute. Do they have value?
Yeah.
You know, right. What I mean? They make our garments. Do they have value? Are you putting them,
mm-hmm.
are they factory workers? Or are they human beings? So this gets into like a lot of this idea of, if we see people as part of a process, a machine, like a process of manufacturing, or do we see people as having something unique on them? Like we talked about the image of God.
Yeah. And we, you know, there's that campaign that is trending right now, the Me Too campaign. You've heard of that with women saying mm-hmm. Me Too and talking about being harassed and sexually exploited. And if you go, you know, we've talked about how both films depict a very sexual world where women are totally objectified at every turn. You know, you've got this big, you know, 10 times the size of Ryan Gosling's naked woman just sort of like kneeling down and promising to give him whatever he wants, you know. And that is the root of this Me Too is turning women into objects. And yeah,
I think I love the first movie much. I just love it so much better than
totally.
The second one.
I agree.
But in the first one, the two kind of more most influential replicants are the Daryl Hannah character, and then I think I forgot the guy's name. He's the main one, blonde haired dude with the really striking blue eyes.
Yeah, I remember his name too, but he's great. Yeah.
But like one of those replicants is made for violence and the other one's made for to exploit sexually.
Yeah.
And so the idea of like these replicants, they're like the earlier gens, right? Like Gen 6 or whatever they're called, or I can't remember what they're called. Nexus 6 or something.
Nexus 6, yeah.
And they're earlier generations, these robots, and they're basically made, one is made to kill and the other one is made to sexually exploit.
Wow.
And that would be what we did with this technology.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that's so it really reflects us.
Absolutely.
It's not reflecting the replicants.
No.
They're searching for life and freedom.
And of course, that's what we would do with the technology.
Right. So they're less than human. So what do we get? Let's make one that like we can kill and have kill other people. And then let's make another one that we can sexually exploit.
Mm-hmm. And not feel bad because it's not even a human.
Well, you're not a human.
Right.
I don't think it's, and then the first movie, like there's hookers everywhere. Basically, it's like prostitutes everywhere.
Everywhere.
And the idea is like that we're still like more, we're like, this is part of the dystopian, like we're morally debased.
Yeah.
And we're still, we still view flesh as something to exploit.
And we're already doing it to real women who are made in the image of God. And so why would it be?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, since we're a film podcast, I mean, this goes back to Harvey Weinstein and what's going on with that. It's terrible.
I'm glad you mentioned that because some of my favorite films are produced by him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that he's overseen some of the better films in Hollywood, and it's disgusting what has come out. Just abuse over years and years and years systematically, and he held the keys to their career, and no one felt like they could speak up because he was so powerful.
Yeah, and he's doing, essentially, he's exploiting vulnerable people.
Yep.
Because he can,
because they don't have the power yet. Yeah. Because it's like Gwyneth Paltrow when she's 19 and she's nobody yet, and he's like, you know, if you say anything, you'll stay nobody, and what do you do with that? Yeah.
And everyone knows it. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that's encouraging is that there is some outrage on that.
I think, yeah, totally.
It's discouraging that it took this long and that somebody could have so much power in Hollywood that they could just openly hurt people and commit criminal acts on people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like kind of like you're not surprised, but at least people were reacting to that.
Yeah. That has been positive.
I wish people had reacted to that with some other stuff that had happened last year. Yeah. Or was brought to light.
Yes.
Yeah. And we didn't react in the same way.
No. And that's an important point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. So here we go. Final thoughts. Let's wrap this thing up. What are your, what's your quick take on Blade Runner 2049 alone? Yeah.
I think it's a good movie. It's underperforming, but I don't. Some people think that's because people aren't smart enough for this movie.
Whatever.
I tend to dismiss that one. Like with Malick, I've dismissed that. I'm like, no, it's a bad movie. I don't think this is a bad movie. I think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's better than a lot of the movies that we've seen this year. I do think. I don't know why it's not performing at the box office. If you're going to see it on a really big screen. Because it won't let you down. Like it's meant to see in a large format. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it. Because I know you're not. If you watch it on your 32-inch TV at home, you're really cheating yourself out of a fantastic movie.
Or your iPhone, please stop.
Do people do that?
I hope not. But
it's like dishonoring film. It's one thing if you're like watching The Simpsons on your iPhone. That's fine. But like, you don't dishonor a filmmaker in a film by watching on your iPhone.
Especially not this one.
Yeah. So we were in a large stadium format, and it was the right format to be in.
Letter grade?
I'd say it's hard because you're comparing it to the first one. Mm. So I'll give it a B. And because I think it's worth seeing, it's worth paying the money to go see it. It gets you into these, so like it gets you into these conversations, mm-hmm. but I think it doesn't have the same. The first one is like an A+.
Absolutely. 100%
and
agree.
So it's hard because it's not the first one. It's a totally different film, but I still think it's a film that will get you thinking. And it brings up a lot of the philosophical moral things that the first one brought up, not quite as elegantly and not with such economy that the first film has. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would go like watch the first film if you had to. Yeah, that's the film that's the better film. But yeah.
Yes. Agreed. First film, A+. I like that economy. You're right. Like, movie comes in at 115 minutes and does 10 times more. Like, yeah. You know? I mean, come on. Love it. So, yeah, overall, though, I agree. It's a very good movie. It's worth experiencing, especially on a big screen. And it's such a beautiful homage to the first movie in terms of tone and atmosphere and visuals. And that's what Villeneuve always brings to the table in his movies. It's just this, it's a feast. It's a visual feast. So see it for that. Ryan Gosling, a little stoic, but it's just some of that magic is missing from the first one, that love story and that organic feeling. But yeah, I think I'm going to land somewhere around a B+. I'm with you. Probably more a B that's toward a B+, somewhere in that vicinity. So you might be disappointed if you're a fan of the original, but definitely see the original if you haven't. I'm sure there's some people out there who haven't seen the original, and like you can. Google Play is the place to watch the final cut. It's not on Amazon. You don't want to see the theatrical version that I think is all Amazon has, so go to Google Play. It's $2.99, and you can watch the final cut.
If you want HD, you can actually get an Ultra HD for $5.99.
Ultra HD.
I know. I'd like to see that. I don't have a TV that can do that.
I don't either.
But what I would say is, yeah, definitely, like I did that, and it was... You know, get some friends together, watch that film, and it's like get your living room full, get some popcorn, and then talk about it. An hour and 15, you could have a full discussion in the time it takes to watch the,
the second one.
But I think it's Blade Runner is one of those films that functions for a 16-year-old, and then it will function for 26, 36, 40. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you can watch it and you'll get different things out of it as you enter different life stages even.
And don't wait too long on seeing the sequel in theaters because I don't know how long it's going to last. As Tim alluded to, it's kind of a box office bomb. Like it's only made $81 million, which sounds great until you factor in that it cost over $150 million to make. So they're kind of losing a ton of money. And yeah, it was only number one for the first weekend, and then it was immediately replaced by what was it like Happy Death Day or some genre film like the
Happy
second
Death Day, which is like I haven't seen it, but it was I saw a preview in the theaters and I was like, really, this film can get made.
So that replaced it on the second weekend. I know.
It gets made because we watch it. Don't go watch that stuff.
So yeah, not quite the hit I think the studio was looking for there, but what are you going to do? It probably will still make back its money overseas. I think it's just opened in like Tokyo. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see it doing well there.
So can I put a plug in for all the folks that feel like we didn't get have a like satisfying yes. discussion, and we yes. didn't talk about all the illusions and the nail through the hand and the
Galatian syndrome, and...
right? Anything that's like you, where you're like really into all of the biblical illusions, Christian illusions. We do have wonderful people who are into that. And they post stuff on our Twitter. So I know that if you, what's the Twitter handle?
It's at @CinemaFaith. Yep. Dan Baker is mostly in charge of that, and he does an amazing job. And he did post an article from the AV Club that actually goes through all of the illusions in the film, to like theological and Christian illusions. So there's one of many articles. Yeah.
So if you feel like our analysis is not even quite skeletal, you can go get like there's all this. If you know more, there's more data out there for you folks that are yes. feeling like we didn't quite hit some of the things you were interested in. And also, we love interacting with you. So go to iTunes and... Mm-hmm.
5-star rating and a quick 60-second review. Yeah. And you can go on your podcast app if you got an iPhone, or you can just pull up, download iTunes quick on your desktop. It helps so much if you could just leave a review. Thank you for that. And also, feedback at podcast@cinemafaith.com. That's our email address. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on Blade Runner and what we missed, and... we'd love it. We'll read it on air.
I'm sure we've missed a ton.
Oh, of course.
So, yes, tell us what we missed. Tell us how you totally missed the point of these movies. We'd love to hear about it. It's great. And we'd love to feature what you have to say.
So that is podcast@cinemafaith.com. Great talking film, Tim. Always. Sometimes I just like, especially usually as I'm driving over, I just feel so grateful that we get to do this once
That's
a
cool,
month.
Huh?
It's just awesome. Yeah. So keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.